you for coming. I think it's a little loud. No? Okay. I guess because I'm right here, very close to him. So this morning, I want to return to this text we've been looking at for many, many months. It's called The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva. We have what's called an intensive for members going on right now, sort of studying this in depth. But I think there are many things that are in it that really are meaningful for, quote-unquote, the general public, which is us. The Way of the Bodhisattva by Shantideva. Shantideva is was a Indian, eighth century, great Buddhist scholar and teacher, master. The Way of the Bodhisattva is one of the great, great classics of Buddhism. It's one of those texts that if you only could choose one text to guide you in this life, I think this would be it. Again, the Bodhisattva gives us a meaning of life and a purpose in life that is not generally accessible to us. A Bodhisattva is an enlightened being, an awakened being. Someone who is awakened to their true nature. Someone who has freed themselves of a delusion of self and just lives a truly wise and compassionate life. It is the path of altruism, but not the path of altruism that is forced from the outside, but a path of altruism that arises naturally from within. It really gives real meaning and purpose to life. We know in our culture there's a lot of emphasis on what we do, what we achieve, but not a lot of emphasis on who we are. And this is all about who we are. And so it is. To me, as meaningful as it was in the 8th century, as relevant as it was in the 8th century, and because of the condition of our current life, probably even more necessary than ever. So we are in the 8th chapter. We have learned about this bodhisattva path, this path of awakening, this path of altruism. We've learned how to generate it within ourselves in a consistent and meaningful way. We've learned how to maintain it through mindfulness and vigilant introspection and how to be really careful about positive and negative mind states. And we've learned how to cultivate patience and understanding as an antidote to anger, which is the great defiler of the altruistic mind. And then we are now in the final section. And we spent time learning about diligence. Diligence in this means the joy in doing good, the energy of leading in a wholesome life. It is an energy that we are not used to. You know, it's a different kind of energy to motivate us. We're used to being motivated by wanting to acquire, that energizes us, to achieve, to get somewhere. We're motivated often by fear. we have many unhealthy ways to motivate ourselves. Desire is a great motivator for many of us, achievement, etc. But this motivation of wanting to do good, of wanting to be helpful, of wanting to be healthy and awake, not only for one's own benefit, but because then we have the capacity of showing up in life, in relationships, in our world, in a healthy and noble way that we can really contribute to our society. To have this as kind of the fundamental energy of our life that informs all the doing is a very unique practice and teaching. So we went through diligence. And again, for those of you who are not familiar with the text, I certainly recommend you get yourself a copy. There are many translations. So we're now in the eighth chapter, Meditative Concentration. Shanti Davis says, in concentration, in cultivating diligence, as I just described, that was the last chapter, in concentration I will place my mind. For those whose minds are slack and wandering are caught between the fangs of the afflictions. So here he's making a case for developing concentration, something that some of us just tried earlier today. And even though in our attempts at developing concentration this morning, mainly on our body and breath, you know, the purpose of meditation and concentration is not to become an excellent breather, not to become an excellent meditator, right? It's so we can get out of being caught between the fangs of the afflictions. Again, the Buddha only teaches one thing. He says, I teach one thing, liberation from suffering, end of suffering, the realization of nirvana. So that's why we need to concentrate our mind, because if we don't concentrate our mind, we will always be pulled by our own inner afflictions, our own inner mind states, which are all coming from the past, or will endlessly be pulled around by our nose by what's going on externally, people, situations, right? If we want to achieve something, we have to focus, we have to be concentrated. And so concentration is not just a very particular skill related to the body, breath, or to a visualization, or whatever you're, it's not, or a candle, or whatever you're, it's not about that in Buddhism. It's developing that ability to be totally concentrated and focus on this one thing. Becoming an awakened person, becoming a compassionate person, becoming a kind, you know, whatever, however you define it. If we want to become that, we have to be focused. To be focused and be concentrated means we have to not always be swayed, distracted, pulled in 25 different directions. Right? We need to get the energy of our mind and our life pointed in the direction we want, and we have to be able to follow through. Right? So this is the mind that is concentration. Then he says, I'm skipping around, penetrative insight joined with calm abiding utterly eradicates afflicted states. Knowing this, for search for calm abiding. So what he's talking about now is really the two aspects of the Buddhist meditative path. I mean, mindfulness is the basis, but in terms of meditation, first is calm abiding, learning to quiet and calm and stabilize and concentrate our minds, right? To have a mind that feels well, that's energized, right? And it's clear, it's calm. That's part A. Part B is what he calls penetrative insight, which is really the next chapter, ninth chapter, the wisdom chapter, which we'll be getting into. Penetrative wisdom means, quite simply, that we understand how things really are. Right? If we're not wise, we're always fooled. We're ignorant of the way things are. How are things? Are things permanent or impermanent? Big difference. Do I have a permanent self in here or not? Do you have a permanent self or not? What are thoughts? Are thoughts real? You see? Things like that. So, in Buddhist teaching, while mindfulness and concentration are the basis, it is only considered penetrative insight, which cultivates wisdom, really has the power to free us. So Buddhism is a path of wisdom. But as you'll learn today, it's also a path of compassion. Relinquishing all other aspirations, focusing myself on one intent alone, I'll strive to still my mind. So he says it in many different ways. But that's where we have to begin. As Thich Nhat Hanh says, you know, we have to let the silt settle down so we can see through the water to the bottom, so we can see what's swimming around. But it's, you know, we want to see what's swimming around, but, you know, when we look in our minds, it's very murky. It's not clear. We can't really see. We know something's wrong. We know something's driving us. We know we have stuff inside us that just push us this way and that. We know we're triggered by this. We know we're triggered by that. But yet it's all kind of foggy. We just know usually after the fact, right? As well as we have very limited capacity for paying attention. You know, we make a vow, we set our intention, and 10 minutes later, you know, we can't even remember what it was. Right? So we wonder why, even though we are good people and we have good intentions and we have ideals and blah, 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 but we don't ever realize it. And again, it's often not because we're bad people or we don't mean it, it's because we lack. We lack a calm, clear mind, and we lack the capacity to concentrate our minds. There's nothing inherently wrong with us, see? Many of us, we have this self-defeatist kind of thing, you know, so we're not making progress, and we go, well, there must be something wrong with me. Or there must be something wrong with the path, or there must be something wrong with the teacher. You know what I mean? We love to blame. But the truth is, we just haven't developed the skills and the competencies to work the path yet. That's all. And so the answer to that is simply just develop my skill, develop my concept. You know, how do I do it? Practice. It's very simple. So then, Shanti, are there any questions about that? I mean, it's important that we get clear what we're up to here. It's kind of simple. So then, before Shantideva gets into some aspects of what he wants us to meditate on. And again, see, this is the same thing. See, we want to jump right into meditation, right? And Shantideva, this is the eighth chapter, and he's only introducing meditation. Because he knows that if we don't get a lot of other things kind of straight in our life, in our mind, when we come to concentration, when we come to calming the mind, you know, it's a mess. It's pulled this way and that way. And a lot of that is not because we're not great meditators. It's because our life is chaotic. We're not clear, right? And so he knows that. For if I act like childish beings, sure it is that I shall fall into unwholesome destinies. So why do I keep company with infants? One moment friends, the next bitter enemies. Even pleasant things arouse their discontent. Ordinary people, it's hard to please them! ! That's what I mean. This is like 8th century India. He's sort of, right? Jealous of superiors, they vie with equals. Proud to those below them, they strut around when praised. Say something untoward to them, they seize with anger. What good was ever had from childish folk? Now, that's just a few of the stanzas. He goes on and on. All right. I mean, isn't this right? Right? I mean, we have family, we have friends, we love them, we have good times, but also, right, they are a source of what? What? Endless drama, you know. When you do what they want, they're happy. You don't do what they want, they're unhappy. Say the right thing, they're happy. Say the wrong thing, you'll pay the price. Right? I mean, and it's just all day. Colleagues, everybody's got a thin skin. Everybody's hurt, easily hurt, easily resented. Right? Including us, right? I mean, isn't this the truth? And these are with the people we love. Right? We have children, great source of joy and happiness, but also there's another side to having children. Anybody know about that one? Yeah, they become a great source of suffering to us. And we become a source of suffering to them, especially when they're teenagers. So, I mean, Shanti Deva is just saying, you know, look at that. You know, and then he goes on and he says, for this is so, the wise have no attachments. From such cravings, fear and anguish come and fixes firmly in your understanding. All that may be wished for will by nature fade to nothing. Alone we're born, alone we come into the world, and when we die, alone we pass away. No one shares our fate, and none truly our suffering. So he's just making a point, right? A valid point, right? That the truth is, you know, we come into this world naked, and alone. Hopefully there are a couple of people around to take care of us and cherish us and keep us alive and well. And then we go through life, right? And people come and go, situations come and go, relationships come and go for all kinds of reasons, including death. But, you know, even, I mean, for all of us, if we look back into our life, we see every year we have different relationships, different situations. They just come and go, come and go, come and go. And eventually we will age and people will fall away. And eventually we will find ourselves once again. The same way we came in alone, we will depart this world alone. And that's just the truth. And everything we've done and everything we haven't done and everything we've accumulated and all our achievements or failures will amount to nothing. Isn't that true? I mean, that's just the truth. He's making a point here. He's not, again, he was a monastic, okay? So he kind of turned his back on all of this. But we're lay people. But also, please understand, according to the biography of Shantideva, he was born into a princely family. He kind of knew worldly life, but he chose to leave it at a certain age and devote himself to a monastic life, a hermit life. So for those of us, you know, those of us, what's called householders, those of us in the world, those of us in the world of relationships and friends and family, and those of us in the world of careers and gain and loss and etc. You know, he's kind of telling us, don't be obsessed by this stuff. You know, don't be obsessed every day by every drama, your own drama, everybody else's dramas around you. You know, the news, every day there's new news. Good news, bad news, right? It's just the history of the world. Right? And again, we're so focused on our achievements, on our work, on this. No wonder when we come to sit in meditation, to still and quiet our mind and begin to attend to that which is most essential, we find it very difficult, don't we? Because we are so externally driven. We are so externally focused. We are so obsessed by the world and the people of the world. And so he's making a point here, okay, to help us. Right? He's not saying leave it, but he's saying temper. Temper these relationships, temper these attachments, just so your mind's more at peace, you know. He calls us childish beings. Anybody insulted by that? How dare he? Right? You know, but he's making a point because we are like children. Right? We take ourselves so seriously. And we're so easily emotionally pushed this way and that way like children. And at the end of the day, for most human beings, they really want to do what? They want to have fun. Right? They want to just have fun and pleasure. Just like children. So that is why he calls us childish beings. Right? I mean, I could go on and on, but I think you understand. He's trying to wake us up. You know, he's kind of trying to wake us up to say, you know, there is something so wonderful that we can be living for and cultivating within our minds. There is this path, as they say, where he said, you know, just calm, abiding, penetrative insight will free us of all our afflictions. You'd think that somebody would kind of go, wow, that's worth devoting some energy to, worth devoting some time to, right? But not us, why not? Because we're too busy. We got too big of a to-do list today, right? We got so many other things to achieve, so many phantasms to run after that we've been running after. You know, in this teaching, pleasure is often, and again, it's not like we're against pleasure. It's like the purpose of your life is not pleasure. Pleasure is often said, it's like if you're a thirsty person drinking salty water, you know, in the short run, it'll quench your thirst, but it'll truly what? Make you only more thirsty. In the same way, our craving for pleasure, our craving to be noticed, our craving to be liked, it is endless. How do we know? Because we've been doing it for decades and we're still not satisfied. Right? We still need people to like us, to love us, to say good things to us. We still need them to notice us. Right? We still need more things. I mean, if all these things were so beneficial, then how come they haven't satisfied me? Right? I mean, to be an adult and not a child means we begin to look at these things. We don't expect children to look at these things. Right? You know, when we're around children, we appreciate them because they're children. And they're at a developmental stage. But we are growing up. We are adults. And there are things that we need to understand. So we can be, again, this is not like a spiritual path. You got to, you know, it's like, this is a path of happiness. This is a path of ease. This is a path of well-being. This is a path of joy. I mean, that's what he's selling, okay? And he can't figure out, you know, why, you know, only four people have showed up for his talk. right? I mean, you know what I mean? In the sports stadium, they're screaming their heads out for 80,000. You know, and he's like, he can't figure it out. You see? Right? So we need to figure it out for ourselves. Are there any questions about this? Yes. What seems so hopeless?
To find a way out of all that that wasn't giving me happiness.
Yeah, well.
And I have no idea where to turn to trust.
Yeah. Yeah, so I gotta read. So the question is, but Lee's just saying for her own experience was, but actually for many people caught in this kind of fundamentally unsatisfactory world, that we work, there's some line where Shanti Davis says, sentient beings, they work so hard. They work so hard, they labor so hard. I mean, he was looking in his own time, you know, farmers. You know, they work so hard for so little. He said, if they put half that amount of energy into their spiritual practice, they'd all be fully enlightened Buddhists. Right? All of us in this room, if we put all the energy that we have put obsessively into work, into career, into school, into relationships, we would be fully enlightened Buddhas. We'd be happy. But we don't. Because we don't know better. That's the thing, is we don't know better. That is why it is considered of great fortune, for those who consider it great fortune, most people would not, to come across the path. To come across a teacher, to somebody, because left to our own devices, like you said, we're just you know we're the rats in the maze, and we can't find our way out, and we still are hoping that when we get the cheese, everything will be all right. Right? I mean, you know, and we think we're highly evolved. Right? So, yeah, so that is why, you know, it is so wonderful to have, these great teachers who have, you know, kind of through their own introspection, right, have kind of come to understand what's going on, but also have found another way, right? And not only of that, they have been willing then to teach year after year, decade after decade, lifetime after lifetime, to show us childish beings, you know, there is this other path in life. Yeah, so it's, you know, in the Buddhist teaching tradition, it's considered, you know, there are many places, many cultures, many geographic places, many societies where what we're talking about is never mentioned, right? And I mean, and that's probably for many of us, the people we grew up with, maybe. You know what I mean? Nobody would, you know, it's like, they didn't know better. They thought this was all there was, right? Get up, go to work, come home, have a few beers, watch TV, call it a day, and hopefully have some fun on the weekend. I mean, isn't that what passes for life? Right? And all the stuff inside, all the potential of the human mind for wisdom and understanding and compassion, and you know what I mean? All the beautiful things are rarely known. And if they're known, they kind of happen more random. I mean, no one ever says, no, that's normal. You know, Oh, your mind's at ease. You go to the beach and you have, and all of a sudden you relax and let go and you feel some happiness when you're in nature and relax. Oh, that's your normal mind. You can be like that all, that's where you're supposed to be all the time. Right? You see, we have these little flashes where we're understanding, where we're patient, where we're this, and we think, oh, how wonderful in a random way of, you know, this has happened. We never think, could I be like this all the time? Shantideva is saying yes. He's showing us the path. They indeed, possessed of many wants, will suffer many troubles, all for very little. They're like the ox that pulls the cart and catches bits of grass along the way. Right? You remember, you've probably seen that, you know, the ox pulling the heavy cart. Hard life. But every now and then, the driver lets him what? Have a few little bites of grass, and the ox is momentarily what? Satisfied. And so we'll continue to plod on, pulling. He's saying we're like that. Oh, here's that line. He said, with but a millionth part of such vexation, enlightenment itself could be attained. Those who crave, I mean, that mind state that endlessly wants, it's always dissatisfied, are plagued far more than those engaged upon the path. Yet Buddhahood is not what they attain. So, again, there's a lot more there, but this is... So, now he says, strive at first to meditate upon the sameness of yourself and others. This is important. You know, meditation, concentration is not just meditating on our breath. Okay? We can take this concentrated mind and meditate on many things, concentrate on many things that can bring us great benefit. He said, at first meditate upon the sameness of yourself and others. This is the fundamental practice of this awakened path. In joy and sorrow, all are equal. Thus be guardian of all as you are of yourself. The hand and other limbs are many and distinct, but all are one. Our body to be kept and guarded. Likewise, different beings, in their joys and sorrows, are like me in wanting happiness. Since I and other beings, both in wanting happiness, are equal and alike, what difference is there to distinguish us, that I should strive for my happiness alone? Since I and other beings, both in fleeing suffering, are equal and alike, what difference is there to distinguish us, that I should save only myself and not the others? So Shantideva will now, using really very strong logic, to try to convince us that this arbitrary way, that in this world where everyone is the same, right? We may be different in terms of our country of origin, we may be in terms of our gender, in terms of our all these various identities we have, we may be very different in many ways. But what unites all human beings is all human beings don't want to suffer. And all human beings want to be happy. Is that not true? Whether they, you know the way or not. That is the truth. Republicans and Democrats, conservatives, progressives, right? Muslims and Christians and Jews, you know, everyone. You know, when you pull off the covering, the labels and the names, everybody wants to be happy. They want their children to be happy. They want their parents to be happy. They want their friends to be happy, don't they? You know, they don't want them to suffer. And yet, he says, who do we only think about? Ourselves. And he says, in the same way, you know, if you think about our body, we call it our body, but our body is really just a collection of many parts, isn't it? Right? All different kinds of organs and tissues and muscles and, right? You know, they're all different parts. And yet, we conceive of our body as one body. And when any part within our body is not well or is hurting, other parts of the body take care of it. We know our immune system works that way, right? But also we know if there's an itch on my left hand, my right hand will scratch it. How kind. But why does it do that? Because we have the sense of one body, right? And yet Shanti Deva says, you know, all beings are really one body. Why do we distinguish between your pain and my pain, my happiness and your happiness? Right? Why do people have such trouble in relationships these days? Why is that such a struggle for people? Why? Because most people are thinking about what? What? Themselves. My happiness, my needs, my wants. You're here to satisfy them. Right? And of course, the other person is doing the same thing, right? You see, what if, you know, I'm here for you, you're here for me. I'm here to relieve you of your suffering. I'm here to support your happiness. So, I mean, it's just so logical that that's really the way it is. Isn't it? And yet, For many reasons, we don't see it that way. We don't see the commonality of all of us. Rich and poor, black and white, you know, it doesn't matter. We're all the same. And if this simple fact was universally known, right? You know, don't call it Buddhism, don't call it anything. This universal fact was known to everyone. What a different world it would be. You know, I'm here to take care of your pain. I'm here to be of service to you. You know, what if everyone in this world showed up in this way? But because that has not happened yet, what Shantideva is going to say to us is, why don't I begin to show up that way? And then he does really this incredible logical thing. I mean, there are many other things that I hope you would read that he really kind of breaks down this. You know, and again, it's also, I think, our culture, the American culture, maybe, you know, we are so what? Individualistic. Right? You know, the ethos of our society is, if I take care of myself, my needs, then what? Right? Then society will benefit. Right? It's such a bizarre notion. Right? Because everybody's different. So if I just only think of myself, my needs, my wants, then the whole society will benefit. No. He's saying the opposite. Right? It's when we, you know, I remember the Hilarion Dalai Lama once. He said, you know, it's just numerical. Right? 6 billion people, one of me. I'm one, they're 6 billion. Who should have more influence? It's like, you know, who should I be more concerned about? I mean, it's so logical, right? And yet, we're all trapped in our own little cocoon of self where all we care about is me. And maybe we'll extend that out to our family members if we're feeling good that day. The drop of sperm and blood belong to others. What she's saying here, the drop of sperm and blood belong to others, which means basic biology, mom and dad, right? Sperm and blood, that's what he's saying. Belong to others. It was our parents, right? Right? It was our parents who created our body, this body, right? Yet through strong habituation, I came to have in its regard a sense of I, though in itself is devoid of entity. I mean, this is a fundamental teaching, which we'll get into in the wisdom chapter, that this I is just there's no real I in here. But yet, we've learned to call it what? Right? My body. Isn't that true? Right? Even though it's not our body. This is, our bodies are the creation of our mothers and fathers. Is that true? Yeah. And yet we say, my body. And so, why not identify another's body, calling it my I? And vice versa. Why should it be hard to think of this my body as another? This is fascinating. He said, what if, as I look around the world and I serve everybody, I said, oh, there's my body. Try it. Look around the room. And everybody you see, just say, oh, there's my body over there. Rather than saying, there's so-and-so. There's my body. There's me. See what happens just in that little, tiny little labeling things differently. There's my body. Hello, me. Can you feel the shift just by that? Why not identify another's body, calling it my I? Just as in connection with this form devoid of self, my sense of I arose through song habituation, why should not the thought of I through habit not arise of related to another? Thus, when I work for others' sake, there'll be no sense of boasting self-congratulation. It is just when I feed myself. I don't expect to be rewarded. Right? Fred, you're such a kind person for feeding me today. Thank you. Right? Well, thank you for getting me dressed today. That was so kind. Right? I mean, that's what he's saying. I mean, we don't expect all the good things we do for ourselves, that we expect, you know, to be rewarded. And yet when we do any kind action for anybody else, what do we think? Hey, don't I get a thank you at least, you know? Right? I mean, right? Is anybody going to pay attention that I just did a nice thing for somebody else? Can you, right? That's what he's saying. But what if, you know, we all beings, one body, we saw everybody as myself. And everybody's needs and wants and pains and sufferings and happiness were my concern. In the same way I kind of naturally take care of my own body and my own needs and my wants and my own desire to be happy and my own desire to be free of suffering, I did that for everybody else. How would that be? And he's saying, you don't have to wait to be fully enlightened Buddha. He's saying just through a kind of a shift in how we label, a significant change can occur. Those desiring speedily to be a refuge for themselves and others should make the interchange of I, quote, and other, quote, and thus embrace a sacred mystery. And now within this meditative chapter, there are now practices. Learning how to interchange and exchange self with others. So very practical ways of doing that as a meditation. Because again, it is not natural to us. Right? It is natural to do it for ourselves. That's very easy. Right? We are very attentive to our own bodies and its needs, its aches, its pains. We're very attentive to getting pleasure and avoiding pain. Again, we're very attentive to asserting our needs and our wants and our desires. Right? So we don't need any more practice with that. But we need a lot of practice to do it for others. Right? Now, it is very easy to make grandiose statements. Right? We could leave here today and go, that's it. From now on, I'm going to be an altruistic human being. Right? I'm going to love everyone. I'm going to be compassionate for everyone. You know what I mean? People do that. And they think they're somehow have taken a developmental step. But all it's just, you know. So what I would suggest is, why don't we go home and we practice with those closest to us? What? Family, friends, colleagues. To really enter the world in this way. You know, Thanksgiving. Even though the indigenous people of this culture probably regret what they did when they saw how things turned out. And yet, if we ever believe the stories, right? Some people took pity on some strangers. And treated them as they would to themselves, to feed them, to show them how to survive. Right? That's an act of altruism. It wasn't like, they're not part of the tribe. Right? Who cares what happens to them? In our world today, that's kind of a lot what people think. Shantideva is showing us a altruism which goes beyond all this parochial kind of, you know, everything in our culture these days in the world is just divided up. Endless ways to discriminate ourselves from each other. But this is a very different vision, isn't it, of life? Seeing the common humanity of all of us. And then extending that sense. And again, in these days, it also has to be to our poor planet, right? To see it as an extension of ourselves. Something to care for, to care of, to relieve its suffering, right? It's a little warm in here. Oh, there you go. Even air conditioning systems think of others, you see? You know? Any questions about all of this? I mean, Thanksgiving's coming up. Many of us will be with friends and family. Can you look around the table and go, hello me, hello me, and really sense that, you know, that love that we have for ourselves. We love ourselves, don't we? How do we know we love ourselves? Because that's who we're obsessed about. Who do we think about all day? What? I mean, what's connected to every thought we have? I like this, I don't like that, I don't like the way they're treating me, I want this, I need that, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm cold, I need this, I need that, I don't like the way people said this, I don't like them, you know, it's like, right? So all day long, who are we thinking about? Me. Right? This practice is about coming out of that. You see? All of a sudden opening the eyes and going, oh, look at all these other people. Oh, I didn't realize there's a whole room full of people here. Right? I'm just processing this whole talk by myself. Oh, but there's a whole room full of people, and they're just like me. They want to be happy. They want to be free of suffering, just like me. Everybody, you know, people on Nebraska Avenue, right? They're just like me, aren't they? They just want to be happy. They don't want to suffer. They just don't know better. There's an early line in the first chapter where Shanti Davis says, you know, sentient beings, all they want to do is be happy, and yet all they do is create more misery for themselves. How sad. Right? How sad our brothers and sisters going up Nebraska Avenue. They want to be happy, but look how hard they work and only create more misery for themselves. Those of us who are sitting in here, right, air-conditioned space, cars to get into, hopefully we know better. Right? We're not doing the same thing. We're not going to waste this opportunity we found to chart a good way for ourselves in this life. To really get out of the afflictions, to get out of the egocentricities, right? To really chart an altruistic path in life, which is a path of happiness. You know, there's another line in here, I've probably read it too many times, where they say, you know, look who's happy. The Buddhas, the masters, they're the happy ones. You know, look who's unhappy. Well, those of us who labor so hard for only our own needs and wants. He says, Shanti Devi says, just look. Right? So here come the happy ones. So we'll stop for today. Have a happy Thanksgiving.